Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Happy New Year to you. Hopefully the rest of the 365 days will be prosperous and happy, and you'll be with family and loved ones, and you'll behave yourself. That's what I hear a lot, too, so I'm passing it on to you. And everything will work out good at work and at home, and maybe we can improve the entire society with all the different hiccups that are going on right now. Hopefully that will maybe smooth out or decline. But nevertheless, today's car talk. And if you have a car question or a car problem, I'm especially good when wives and husbands have a problem or a disagreement about something to do with their car. There's lots of do's and don'ts with your cars, and a lot of those do's and don'ts are just simply ingrained in us with our, you know, fathers and mothers and aunts and uncles and what we've seen and what we've done and all that kind of stuff. So we can talk about those, and there's quite a few of them out there that are from the 50s through the even the 90s that are not applicable today at all. Not. And so it's a difficult transition because just like your phone today is quite different than it was in the 90s and in the 80s and the 70s and the 60s. And it's the same way with your car and the computers and how many computers we have and what the computers are supposed to do and how fast can they do their work and how hard are they to diagnose. All that kind of stuff goes right into my wheelhouse. So I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician. I've been working on cars in the Phoenix area since 1979. I graduated from Tempe High School, spent a stint during the 70s with the Scottsdale Police Department, and then opened up my own repair shop in 79, and since then we've been working. We have a repair shop in Tempe. We don't talk about my repair shop because that's not what the show is all about. It's about your car. And so this is not a chest thumping time for me for the next 2 hours. I don't sit here and tell you how great I am and all that kind of stuff. That's not what it's about. It's about you and helping you. So this is how it works. You call in 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and Gil's going to answer the phone. And he's going to say, would you like to talk to Mark? And you're going to say yes. And then he's going to say, okay. And then he's going to say in my ear, John is your first caller. And that's how we do it. So it's real simple, real sophisticated. I'm up in Payson today, and I spent time last night with some friends and neighbors over for New Year's Eve and stuff like that. And it's not the bitter cold that I thought it would be, nor did the weathermen get this weekend right. All the snow we're going to have and all this and all that. It's really been 35 to 40 degrees the entire time. And that's really about it. We've had some rain. When I came up 3 or 4 days ago, the weather or the rain gauge showed 4.5 inches. And since then, we've had another 0.5 inch. But really and truly, we're starting to dry out. And this morning's temperatures are holding their own. And I measure everything by whether I have to wear a jacket or not. So I'm kind of warm-blooded, and I typically don't have a jacket on when many of my friends have jackets on. It's not because I'm tough or anything like that. It's just my thermostat. That's it. 602-508-0960. Autodynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services, and that's out of my mouth. They're family-owned and operated since 1982. As many of the shops I talk about, these are good shops. I can refer you to them with no hesitation, knowing full well they'll do everything right, good, and if they make a mistake, they'll raise their hand. And that's what it's all about. So if you're in Sun City and you say, and I get emails, where's a good shop in Sun City? I'm going to talk to you about Autodynamics, and they're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. And we have a caller.
Say hello to Joey.
Joey, good morning.
Mark, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you.
Outstanding. I just wanted to call and wish you and Renee a wonderful new year, but I did have a complaint to start out the new year, Mark.
Oh, that's okay. You can be first. That's okay. Before we do this, Joey's a lawyer. Okay, everybody? I just want to make that clear. So we all have our own ideas, and perhaps you think that lawyers and auto mechanics go together, and they may very well work together perfectly. And I worked with Joey on a case, and I told him, and I'm telling you, it was a real experience for me because I hadn't seen that level of attention and all that kind of stuff. And the outcome at the end of the day was just wonderful. And as I told you folks before, I'm working 50% for the plaintiff, 50% for the defendant, and I bounce back and forth. I work for insurance companies and lawyers and police departments and county attorneys and stuff, so I'm well versed in measuring Joey's effectiveness and his, and I give him an A+. But anyway, you have a question.
Thank you, Mark. So you said that you don't plug your shop, so I guess I don't know if this will work out as a plug or not, but I brought in a vehicle to you that I bought for one of my kids. Before I bought it, I needed to have it checked out. You checked it out. You told me all sorts of things about it. One of the things you told me about it was, well, that alternator, you know, it's not looking so good. Might need to be replaced in a little while. And I'm just complaining because I don't think I got 6 months out of that alternator before I had to replace it, just like you told me I had to do. So I wasn't very happy with that.
You know, you understand, it's walking that fine line. There was some discoloration on the alternator that indicated at some time or another that this thing had full fielded. Otherwise, it had been asked to give me all you got. And when that happens, sometimes the alternator gets so hot, it'll start throwing solder, and solder holds all the windings together. And then when we start throwing solder, then we have a disconnect in the windings, and then things happen. But I also remember that this was for one of the boys.
One of the boys and one of the girls, so they're kind of sharing it.
Okay. And which one has any either one of them dented one of the four corners yet?
Well, that's a different story.
And father to father, I'm betting that the suspect wears his hair kind of short.
The accused will remain mute.
Okay, fair enough. Because I can't tell you, between fathers, I can't tell you how many times, and you, I'm sure you have too, we've compared kids and stuff. And I just remember when my son got a traffic ticket and I was called to the highway by the highway patrol to pick up my son. And you know, it was just one of those, at the time it wasn't funny, but today it is. So, you know, but then again, he's 40 now.
Yeah. Well, I've got one other question for you, and I would say this doesn't typically fall in your wheelhouse, but after working with you for a couple of years on that case you mentioned, I've learned that there are a lot of areas that seem to fall in your wheelhouse, Mark. So I got a question for you. I've got a 06 F-150, and I've got a little over 250,000 on it. It doesn't owe me a dime, but it's a great old truck, but it's gotten to the point where, you know, things go bad kind of regularly, all the electronics on it and stuff like that. What's the good point, the good breaking point where I need to quit sinking money into it and keeping it running?
Okay. Much of what you describe are things that are time sensitive or mileage sensitive. And so we see those kinds of heavy electrical repairs usually in the 75 to 100,000 mile range, one after the other. But my opinion has always been that when it starts to consume oil and smoke, you're on its last legs. So if you're not consuming oil, it's not leaking profusely, you're not adding oil on a regular basis, it's dependable, then it, and I'm not saying this because it's self-serving, but it's easier to fix the problems and keep the truck because the insurance is cheaper, the license plates are cheaper, the truck is paid for, you don't have a payment, blah, blah, blah. But every motor or every car that comes in that's been overheated significantly or run low on oil where the engine is trashed, all of that is self-induced. Somebody could have pulled over. Somebody could have called a tow truck. Nobody had to drive that car another 20 miles with the needle in the red. So the motors we see and the real collapse of a vehicle's structure and systems, the collapse rarely happens. It's small pieces. By now at 200,000 miles plus, 250, you've been around the world 10 times. You've driven, this truck's gone the equator 10 times. Let's not lose sight of that. And there's a lot of miles on that. But if you had to, if, you know, I would think, let me ask you this. Are you spending $300 a year on it or more?
More, certainly more at this point. In the last year or two, the electronics after, you know, what is it, 15, 16 years,
yeah.
A quarter million miles, have started to kind of give me issues every now and then.
Okay. So. And those typically are going to, whenever they started, so if it's a quarter of a million, then they're going to not come back until another quarter million, and not to mention that the systems and the electronics that we fix are done with parts that have been upgraded. So if we have a wiring connection problem, if we have a plug that doesn't mate perfectly, if we have a variety of things, each 100,000 miles we get another part with a subset on the part number telling us this is, they won't really tell you, but this is upgrade number 427 of this part. And so, I don't know, the alternative is sales tax and license on a new vehicle or a used vehicle, and you have a 50-50 chance of ending up where you're at now. So it's really a matter of budget. If you spend $200 a month, that's $2,400 a year. I would probably doubt that you're spending that. So if you rent the vehicle for, you know, $100 a month or $200 a month, that's pretty good because you can't rent a vehicle for $200 a week. So I'm not trying to get you to keep it. Well, let me ask you this. Whose is this? Yours or someone else's?
So this is one of the kids that drives it primarily, but the reason I like keeping it around is it's my old hunting truck that I get to go out in the wilderness with.
Okay, so. Okay. And so it's a four-wheel drive?
Yep.
Okay, okay.
Yep.
Here's the hard part. The hard part is there might come something big here in the future, like a transmission. If the engine will give you warning because it'll start consuming oil and then you're at the end of its life. It'll leak or consume oil. But a transmission, have you had a tranny put in it yet?
You know, did have a tranny a while back. I can't remember how far back.
Okay.
I can tell you it was far enough back that it was under the extended warranty.
Okay.
So probably within the first 100,000, which was a little unusual. There's some sort of an issue with it out of the manufacturer.
And in reality, 100,000 is a pretty good number, give or take, for a transmission's life under normal operating conditions and circumstances. So I don't know. Let me tell you, I got 140,000 miles on my truck, I don't have any intention of getting rid of it. I'm going to see if I can do 250,000 miles. I know that the end of the time, here's the end of the truck's life from the engine point of view is leaking oil or drinking oil. And so when that happens, you have a decision to make. But on the other hand, if Joey hasn't had a new truck and with those new four-wheel drives with the small diesels, the eco diesels or the turbocharged diesels or stuff like that intrigues him, then, you know, I'm on your side.
Yeah, I'll have to see what the wife thinks about that.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's why I was walking so carefully.
Right.
So anyway, thank you, Joey.
Thank you for that. Yeah, thank you, Mark. You guys have a great year.
And you too. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem here at your service, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. In 1988, when I first started doing radio in the Valley, one of the questions that was asked is where's your shop? And the show isn't about my shop. So I created a best car repair shops list. Tom Blackwell's been on that list since day one. He's at 40th and Greenway up in the northeast quadrant of the city. He holds down that area for me pretty good. I would like to have other shops up there, but it's difficult for some of the shops to pass the filter that I presently have and have had for quite a while. So Blackwell's a good guy. He knows old cars, vintage cars. He employs ASC certified technicians. He knows right from wrong, oil changes, engine swaps, domestic and import vehicles. Pretty full service. So if you live up in that area and you're looking for a good garage, Blackwell Automotive is the place I would suggest you go. We have open lines available, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960. Lenny, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Mark, I read where the bad guys are stealing catalytic converters wholesale. And what are the costs of replacing one of these? And with the labor involved to replace one, and what would it cost for a new converter? Well, I understand with a Sawzall or a service hole, they can cut these things out in 5 minutes. 5 minutes is all it takes to cut them out. And they want them for the metals in there, platinum and rhodium, which is valuable metals.
Yes.
That's what they're stealing them for.
Yes. All of what you said is right, and everything pretty much since 1996 has had a catalytic converter on it. And a catalytic converter's job is it has certain chemicals within the catalytic converter, and any unburnt fuel or any fuel that hasn't been completely burnt up, and there's a difference, because raw fuel is HC, hydrocarbons, and then a puff of air that contains molecules of fuel that haven't been consumed, that's called carbon monoxide. But a catalytic converter's job is, think of it as for everybody else, it's a huge grill fire. It's what you use to barbecue your steaks. Inside this thing, it's got, for just visionary reasons, it's got pellets and briquettes, and they're glowing bright red. And as the exhaust comes through the catalytic converter, we're going to consume the rest of the fuel molecules right there. And what we send out the tailpipe is carbon dioxide and a little oxygen. So that's kind of what the job of the cat is. Here's my problem, Lenny, with this whole catalytic converter thing. Yes, they're selling them, but they're tightening up that end of the let's buy your catalytic converter, because the police are smart enough to know that they are taking catalytic converters in an undercover way to a variety of places in town well known for buying sawed-off catalytic converters. The catalytic converter is underneath the car. It has a pipe coming in the front and a pipe coming out the back. The pipe coming in from the front is from the engine. The back one goes to your tailpipe. So they just get underneath there with the Sawzall. What I don't understand, Lenny, is the noise that a Sawzall makes cutting a 2 or 3 inch piece of pipe is really loud. And when you said 5 minutes, I don't think that's the case at all. I'm quite sure that they're in and out of there within a minute or two, because we've talked about this.
They look for them where they're in parking lots, like in shopping centers. They get down, they lay down on a creeper, roll underneath there, and put their Sawzall in, they cut them off in less than 5 minutes.
Yeah,
that's what I read.
Okay, and that's fine, but 5 minutes, you could probably hand saw them in 5 minutes. I'm just saying that it's a lot quicker, but there's a lot of noise going on, and I don't understand why that isn't been something that has been suggested to people. If you hear someone sawing metal with a mechanical device that's going, except it's got the metal cutting sound, you know, raise your hand, pull out your camera, take a photograph of the car that's sitting next to it with three guys in it, handing the guy underneath there a saw. But Lenny, I can't fix it. They have to stop the path of where these guys are taking the cats and taking the cats and selling them for the metals. Now, that cat is going to have a variety of applications, but there's no way a guy can go in and say, I have a 2014 Dodge truck, half-ton truck, gas motor, and I need a cat for it, and he's going to look at one that's been sawed off of a truck and said, oh, yeah, this will work in your truck. That doesn't happen. If he does, he's lying, because he doesn't know it will work in a truck or not. So the end result is they're after the precious metal, and you're right, and they're cutting them off cars. Yes, you're right.
When it is removed, now you have your tool logs has no muffling then once they're removed.
Well,
correct.
Typically, there's going to be some muffler in it, and we don't typically put the muffler in front of the catalytic converter. It's back, but there's a big gap there in the pipe. So the answer is when you start your car, you're going to know somebody's cut the exhaust off, because it's going to be really loud and it's going to sound like a 16-year-old kid on Friday night.
Yes. Well, it'd be you're going to be listening to the constant engine running.
Well,
not being muffled at all. Is that right?
Yes, yes. It's going to be when we were kids, when we had we used to take the mufflers off of our hot rod cars and trucks, and when we cruise central, and that's what it's going to sound like. The sound of the engine unmuffled is akin to the sound of the Sawzall cutting off the pipe. So I'm just wondering why we don't catch more of these guys, because the noise is terrible with them cutting the pipe. So I don't know. It's kind of like a tin can, being cut.
Place them. How would you secure them? if you were to replace them?
I think, first of all, the odds of it happening to a particular person are pretty slim when you look at the however many people are in the Phoenix area. So I'm not going to worry about it. We've got quite a fleet of cars between my families and my grandkids and my mother-in-laws and all that other kind of stuff. I'm not putting cages on any of them. I'm telling them, if you have a cat, your insurance company is going to pay for it anyway, so we're going to bring it in, put a new cat on it, and be done with it. So, no, I don't suggest anybody lose any sleep over this, because really and truly, if you personally know somebody who's had a catalytic converter stolen, raise your hand. I imagine there might be one or two people that have raised their hands out of 100 right now. So we hear about it, but we don't personally know someone. So it's not that prevalent. But anyway, Lenny, you bring up a good point, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you can certainly call us. 602-508-0960. Hopefully, I won't be able to get that one. I've got a caller right now, and to be fair to you, I'm going to hold you over to the break, so please stay with us. And after we take the caller, and anybody else at 602-508-0960, this is the first of the year. This is where we start getting our car ready for the maintenance season for the rest of the year. And so we'll talk about that, where you can kind of start off. And then I'll give you some hints that will save you some money throughout the year that are going to be well within the parameters of the owner's manual, which is the Bible for your car. Folks, don't let anybody overrule the Bible of your car. Don't let anybody say, oh, well, that's not written for Arizona, because that's just flat bull excrement. That's all it is. And people say that all the time in my industry. And then what you say, you can see my panties are wadded up. You say, oh, Mark, I'm sorry, I thought I got the right manual. Would you go ahead and order me a manual for my car that says for Arizona only? Man, and Mark's not going to be able to find one for you unless he takes it to a printer and has somebody stamp that on the front of the cover. So the idea is that that's the manual. That's for the car. That's who built the car. They say, if you want this car to last for a long time, don't overheat it, don't run it low on oil, and here's your maintenance schedule. That's what it's all about. So when we come back, I'm sure we've got at least one caller, and please stay there, and I'll get to you as quickly as we can. But it's 29 minutes after the hour. It's 33 seconds, which means I actually have about 25 seconds before I have to say, I'll be back. And you can call in, 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. The reason why this show sounds so good is because of my engineer named Gil. Gil's a great guy. He keeps me on track, and he helps me look as good as I can. So without Gil, this show would be a mess. But I'm appreciative of Gil, and it's the new year. So, Gil, thank you very much for being my best friend every Saturday for the last 10 years. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, I'm Mark Salem, and we're here until noon talking about car repair questions and problems and stuff like that, and I'm going to take Lyle because he waited through the break. Lyle, thank you for that. How can I help you?
Not a problem. I fell into a 91 GMC pickup truck, top of the line, the Sierra.
Okay.
But on occasion, everything is fine, but on occasion, I get that service engine light, and it comes on intermittently for a short time.
Okay. And it's yellow, right? It's yellow or orange?
It is.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's yellow.
Okay. The most important part of this conversation is the check engine light is always yellow or orange, and it's caution. It doesn't mean that the motor's getting ready to melt down. It doesn't mean that you have to pull off the side of the road. It's not like an overheat, because when you get into the overheat mode, it's red. The icon is red, and when you lose oil pressure, it's red. So we're using traffic lights to tell you.
This thing's only got 50,000 on it.
Okay. Well, that's probably part of the problem, because it's what, 30
well,
years old?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, but I'm here for to hear your wisdom.
Okay. Have you got any grandsons?
No. Okay. I have a son and two granddaughters.
Okay, all right. Well, if either one of the two granddaughters is kind of ornery, then I would have her drive this for a week, and I would say to her, try not to get any tickets. I think the one thing I would want to know is I wouldn't want to go into the computer and say, what are you talking about? What area are you concerned with? But I'm enamored by the fact that the light comes and goes, because that means that the problem's there for a short period of time, and then it goes away. So this could be something.
I didn't know that. That's very informative. Thank you.
Yeah, this is nothing to worry about. Let's pretend you're on your way to Denver, Colorado, and the light comes on and goes off. Just keep going. It's okay. It's okay. It's not a red light. In your particular case, the story behind the light is going to tell us. It's going to tell us what we need to know. Let me give you an example. Just a stupid example. The oxygen sensor in the exhaust system tells the computer how much fuel's coming out of the engine. So when it says, "Wow, way a lot of fuel," let's use a 1 to 5 kind of thing, 5, 5, 5. It's yelling 5. Well, the computer goes, okay, tell me when you're at 2.5, and then starts shutting off the fuel, the faucet, turning the faucet, turning the faucet, and he's watching the oxygen sensor, and this happens like 100 times a second, and they're going like this, and then all of a sudden he goes, okay, 2.5, and the computer says, okay, we're fine. And so that happens by the second, every minute that truck is running, and every minute every car is running. So I'd want to go in and look at some of the codes and see what we've got. And this could be a situation where the thermostat's stuck wide open and we replace the thermostat to fix it. This could be a situation where we have a misfire caused by a bad spark plug or a bad spark plug wire. But you haven't said anything about that, and I listened carefully to that because you might say it runs rough intermittently. But you didn't say that.
No.
Okay? So this isn't anything. Go ahead.
I thought it overheated, but it didn't. I stopped it right away and opened the radiator and lost a little water, and I put less than a quart in.
Okay. Now, on your overheat, that truck's designed to run between half and three quarters. Half and three quarters. Everybody gets real worried when it gets over half. Well, gosh, it's okay. It's okay. Here's the deal. We need, every time you shut the car off, we end up with a tablespoon of water because the hot engine cools down, the air condenses, and moisture falls into the oil. Are you with me?
I am.
Okay. Well, this is science class in high school. I'm just telling you. I flunked it twice.
Didn't make high school.
Okay. I won't ask you your last name then. Okay. So when water boils at 212. So we don't want the water to stay in the oil. So we knew a long time ago in the early 80s, that we needed to bring up the engine temperature from that 160 to 180 mark. So what we did is we put a 195 thermostat, and we took away the 180, and we started running the engines at 220. Now, the water in the oil turns to a vapor. The PCV valve, positive crankcase ventilation. The PCV valve sucks that moisture out, sends it to the exhaust, and it goes out the exhaust. So I want you to know that truck needs and wants to run, give or take, at the halfway mark, a little less and a little more, somewhere in that area. Don't be afraid of that.
All right.
And
I'm not going to be afraid after having spoken with you. Yeah. I was worried about that.
No, heck no. I want to tell you, there's times I'm all hauling horses in my one-ton Dodge, and I'm at three-quarter and past that. I don't even care. I don't even care. Today, from really, let's go, we'll go back to 1990. All those cars can, here's the deal. On your gauge, there's a red zone. Red means stop. Not tomorrow, stop now. So if you flirt with the red, then the first thing you do is turn off your air conditioning and you go, ooh, I just dropped a needle and a half width or two needle widths. Okay, fine. I'm going to keep the air off and I'm going to keep driving. So when you're in really trouble, it's going to be blowing steam out of the radiator into the overflow jug. You're going to hear the thumping at the motor. You're going to hear the steam coming into the overflow jug. That's when the needle's buried and you've driven it too far. But that's only going to occur after the 7th, 8th mark of the gauge, and more than likely that's in the red zone anyway. So, in your particular, who does your repair? Do you have a shop that you take your truck to?
I have a good friend who works on Saturdays at a garage that's on an acre property that used to be a Lone Mechanics garage, but he doesn't work anymore. He's too old.
Okay. All right. Well, here's what. Let's start here.
He's good.
Okay. Stop by an auto parts store, O'Reilly's or AutoZone or CarQuest or NAPA, okay? And ask them if they will just pull the codes for you. And then ask and walk up to the grizzly guy. Don't walk up to the kid with pink hair. Walk up to the grizzly guy who's been there a while. and say, would you, can you pull codes? Can you look at it? Intermittently, my check engine light comes on and goes off. Can you just kind of tell me where it is? Now, all of them are going to do this. They're going to pull the code, then they're going to give you a sheet of paper that talks about that code. That's all you need. And at that particular point, the fact that if there was a hard failure, the light would come on and stay on no matter what. The fact that yours goes on and off indicates that the computer is seeing okay and not okay. But this is no big deal. This is really no big deal. But go get the codes with one of those guys.
I can't tell you what a relief that is.
Well, this thing
is a sweetheart. I don't want to mess it up.
No, you're going to mess it up when it's in the red zone. You're going to mess it up when you drive it with any of the red warning lights on. You're going to mess it up there. Anyway, Lyle, I got to run, but thank you very much. And my email address for all of you is mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at marksalem, Salem spelled like the cigarette, .com, and we'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. As you well know, I have a repair shop, and I have a daughter. She's my youngest, and I have an oldest. My oldest boy is a boy. My oldest child is a boy, and he works at the shop. My middle daughter works for a large company in downtown Phoenix, and my youngest daughter runs the operation, our repair. And this is how she is, okay? I just got this text, and she says, here's the 2021 data for our three businesses. She says, we are averaging 1.4 new customers per day. She says, we had 116 new customers this year, and that's basically repair orders are up, the number of repair orders, and then the other two businesses are up. She says, we've had two customers come in that hadn't been in since 1990. We had five that hadn't come in since 2003. And then we had 735 return since the last time they were in, which was a year ago. And so she goes through and does all these statistical stuff, which really helps me. And what it does is it allows us to be flexible. Not too long ago, I was at the front counter, and there was these two elderly Hispanic gentlemen there, and I knew that they had been around a long time. We're at 38,000 with customer numbers. These guys, their brothers, they're like 48. they've been around a long time. They've been customers for a long time. And when you walk into our shop and you have a two or a three or a four-digit customer number, you've been around a long time. But anyway, during the Christmas season, we gave our customers Andy found a really nifty ice cream scoop that's probably the best ice cream scoop anybody's ever seen. So we bought a whole bunch of them. We put our logos on them, and she puts those on the dashboard of the customer's cars. And so they picked up their truck, and when one of them walked back inside, and I happened to be walking through the lobby, and he goes, hey, he says, somebody left this on the car. And I look at it, and I go, no, we meant to leave it on your car. Thank you for your business. This is our Christmas present to you, and I think you'll find that this is really the best ice cream scoop you've ever seen in your life. It has a wooden handle, and it's as strong as you can imagine. It has this big, nice cup on it, and it's, you know, really, really nice. But anyway, so I'm sitting here looking at, I don't know, 9 pages of data. And she divides it into when we last had these sales and how far behind the scale, how far ahead of the scale, and all that kind of stuff. So I'm really pleased with the kids. They're doing a great job at the shop. But at the end of the day, it helps us steer this ship, and so that we know. And we're striving to continue to have customers, you know, come in once and then use us from that point on, just like everybody else in town. Just no different. Just like everybody else in town. Okay, so we talked with Lyle about his 91 Chevy pickup truck, and let me explain that many of the cars that are older than 1990 are what I call Fred Flintstone cars. These are cars that if you locked yourself in your garage, you'd be dead in 5 minutes. Today, you take a 2021 anything and lock yourself in the garage, and you're going to die of starvation before you die of carbon monoxide poisoning. And I'm being slightly facetious. But today, you can breathe the air coming out of cars. And in the 70s and in the 80s, you didn't dare breathe the air. And during those times, we had a car inside the shop. And if it was a cold winter morning or cold winter day, we had the bay doors closed. But if you brought one of those spewers into the shop and you had to run it while you're servicing the air conditioning or something or the heater or whatever, then you had to open up all the doors. And the guys had headaches and we had symptoms of carbon monoxide poisoning. But there's just a world of difference. Just a world of difference. In the old days with carburetors, we had this, pretend you have a straw. And the straw is bent in a U. And one end of it is in gasoline and the other end of it is facing into the engine. And so as you open the throttle, you increase the vacuum, the suck. So a little bit of throttle, you get a little bit of gas. A lot of throttle, you get a lot of gas. So it's unmetered. It's really very Fred Flintstone-ish by today's standard. Today we have a computer that watches virtually every aspect of the motor. The temperature of the air in the engine, the temperature of the exhaust, the CO, the oxygen content. It monitors every aspect of the car, and it can make changes he can make 12, 15 changes in a second. So if you're sitting there at a traffic light and it knows you're idling, then it's going to turn on the fire hose that sounds like this. And it knows that's just enough of a fuel spray to keep that thing idling nice during the red light. But the light turns green, and the car's being driven by your 16-year-old son, and next to him is a pretty girl, and he slams the throttle down. The computer sees that he slams the throttle down, and the computer opens up the gasoline full force. It just opens up the faucet all the way. And so now we are spraying gasoline into the engine because he's got his foot on the floor. Now, we already know he's racing the kid next to him or he's chasing a girl down or whatever. We know that. But the idea is the computer. Now, the computer knows how hot the car is, how cold the car is. It knows how hot the air is and how much moisture the air has bringing into the engine. So we have all these sensors that help the computer make sure that what comes out of the tailpipe is not going to hurt anybody. And that's the whole purpose. In the 60s and the 70s, like I said, you wouldn't last 20 minutes in your garage if the car was idling and you decided to go meet, you know, Jesus. The idea is on newer model cars, you're going to die of starvation long before you die of anything else if you lock yourself in your garage. You'll just starve to death because you'll be there a long time. It's just my effort to explain the vast difference in what we've got. Today we have cars and trucks with huge horsepower. Huge horsepower. Just romping, stomping diesel trucks, gas trucks, sport utility vehicles, all-wheel drive cars, Range Rovers with blowers on them, all kinds of stuff. And it just makes the world go round, and they do, driven appropriately and cruise control, you know, applied at the appropriate time. They are really good at fuel economy. It's not uncommon for cars out there to be in the 20 and 30 miles per gallon range. A lot of times it's not a constant range, depending on, you know, if you're driving to Flagstaff, you're going to use a lot more fuel going up than you are coming back down. But the computer knows that, and the computer knows what the temperature is outside. It knows what the barometric pressure is outside. It knows the moisture content of the air being aspirated by the engine, because the engine is just a big old mouth that sucks air in, and we squirt fuel in with the air. Then we send it to the spark plug. The spark plug explodes it, and then the exhaust goes out the tailpipe through the catalytic converter. So that's really how simple it is. It's not simple to fix it, because you have to figure out what the computer's doing first, and then you have to know the reason why the computer is adding too much fuel is because it believes that there's no fuel coming out of the tailpipe. It's opening the injector, and it's expecting an injector to go psst, 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 but in reality, the fuel filter's plugged. So even though we have the psst, the fuel is all gone after the first psst, because we have a substandard flow and pressure of the fuel system because we have a plugged fuel filter. So it thinks that it's getting three sprays, but in reality it's only getting one because the other two are just psst, there's no fuel in the spray. And so as a result of that, the oxygen sensor says, give me more fuel, and the computer's going, I've got the faucet wide open. So we have a lean condition and we have a code, but we have to be smart enough to know that we need to look at the fuel filter. We need to look at some of that stuff long before we start replacing parts. Because here's the deal. There's lots of people in my industry that replace parts based on codes. And I want to tell you that less than 50% of the time is the code, the repair. Not too long ago, we had a mass airflow sensor code. It was a $600 mass airflow sensor. The mass airflow sensor's job is to measure the amount of air that's being inhaled by the engine. It's connected to the front of the engine by this big rubber hose. Guess what? Somebody had neglected to tighten the clamp, so that whoever had the hose off last. And so it was sucking unmetered air. So the motor was getting a lot of air, but it wasn't all going through the measuring device called the mass airflow sensor. So the mass airflow sensor was giving bogus readings to the computer, and the computer was trying to match fuel with the substandard airflow. So the computer was having a tough time, the oxygen sensor was screaming and yelling, the mass airflow sensor was giving bad data, and all it was is tighten up a clamp. That's all it was. And I would say of all the shops I know in town, 90% of them play by the rules. 90% of them are proud to fix your car without a whole lot of money. They're proud of their abilities, they're going to brag about it, they're going to tell you how they fixed it and all that other stuff. There's going to be some of the shops that are going to take advantage of you, and they're going to sell you a mass airflow sensor and tighten up the clamp. I can't help you with that. You know, I just can't help you with that. I can only tell you that if you suspect that, then you should ask for your old parts back. That's always a good thing, because if you ask for your old parts back, it's easy enough to put that old part back on your car and see how it runs then. And if it runs really, really fine, then perhaps you call Master Charger Visa and say, I don't want to pay this bill because I asked for my old part back. He gave it to me. Or he gave me the part, but it's not for my car, and here's the documentation for that. So he gave me this part, but it's really for a Buick, and it's not for my Ford. So that's the kind of stuff that happens in my industry. Through the grace of God, not very often, but it still does happen. So you just, and the key here is ask for your old parts back and pay with a credit card. If you pay with a credit card, you're protected to some extent. You can call your credit card company and say, I want to dispute this charge. I want some time to have somebody look it over or do this or do that or whatever. And the idea is that you can do that. So pay for your repairs with a credit card. Ask them all the stuff you talked about, ask them to regurgitate that on your work order. So I'd like you very much to write down what you just told me on the work order. I have a husband, and he just likes to, you know, look at that kind of stuff. And he's not available to talk to you right now. And what you said to me went in one ear and out the other. So please, just write down the whole story, how you got to the idea of what we needed for the repair of our car. You're not going to catch the guy that's going to be able to plug a vacuum line in and fix your O2 sensor problem. If he sells you an oxygen sensor, unless you have the old one. Now you say, well, he's just going to give me any old one. No, oxygen sensors are pretty model and engine specific. It would be highly unlikely that he could come up with a used oxygen sensor and a bad one that would be applicable for your car. That's kind of tough. So, I mean, when we have an inventory of oxygen sensors, we might have 50 numbers or more. So it's not like one oxygen sensor fits all the Chevrolets. That's not the way it is. Or Fords or whatever. So anyway, we're going to come back for another hour of fun and frivolity. You're welcome to join us. The phone number is 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, I have a toll-free number for you. 888-960-9696. And because we are 960, the Patriot. So that number again is 888-960-9696. We have no lines open, we have all lines open right now. Gil answers a call, so we have 5 lines available, so you have a 1 in 5 chance to give us a call, and we can talk about your car problem or your concern or something you heard with respect to a wife's tale that your dad used to say, is it true, is it not true, and stuff like that. And yes, Pennzoil oil is still a good oil. So is Quaker State, and so is all the rest of them. And where they're made and where the oil comes from really doesn't make any difference, because they're all refined to the same specification. So oftentimes it's just a matter of price. We'll be back right after this.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. And if you'd like to join us, the lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, you're listening to us on the Internet, 888-960-9696. Gil's the one that answers the phones. He's just going to ask you for your name, and then he whispers in my ear what your name is. And I go to your call. Real quick, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been around since 1970, but Brian and Thelma, the husband and wife that own and operate Thompson's Auto Repair, I've known their parents, and their parents have been in the gas station business since the late 60s. So I've known their parents a very long time, and because of that, I know all about Brian and Thelma. I can tell you that they are the salt of the earth. They are a wonderful couple, and when you meet them, you'll understand why Mark Salem thinks so highly of them. Is just because of how kind and considerate and how knowledgeable both of them are about car repair. It's the only shop in Mesa I can point you to. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, downtown, and it's the only shop, and I'm sorry for that, but they are really good at what they do. That's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Now, there's only one transmission shop in town that I can refer you to. There's a couple of wholesalers out there that I use. And they do a good job, but they don't work for the general public. But Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in Phoenix since 1968. Phil and his staff are transmission diagnostic and repair experts. So if you have anything wrong with your car and it's a transmission thing you think, and Phil tells me that about half the time it's not a transmission problem, it's an engine problem. But I must confess that that's something kind of difficult for us technicians to figure out sometimes ourselves. With the help of a transmission guy, we can typically identify if it's an engine miss that's causing it or if it's a shutter that's caused by the torque converter in the transmission. And that kind of situation occurs a lot. So Automatic Transmission Exchange is at 40th Street in Washington, and they're very good at what they do, and they'll take a drive with you if you can demonstrate the problem. But you can't take them to Tucson and hope it's going to happen between Jefferson and Tucson. And he says that with a smile on his face. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Good morning, Cusser. How are you?
I'm fine, Mark. I just have a comment about the catalytic converters being stolen.
Okay.
I have a 1998 Frontier, and since we're in Arizona, it was simply unbolted, and luckily the thief left the nuts and bolts for me when he stole it.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
And I also have a 2004 Frontier when the previous owner had it. She said it was hacked off with a Sawzall, and she had a universal one welded back on. So police said Nissan and Toyotas have a different mix of metals, and they're more in demand by thieves.
Okay.
So that's basically all I have to say today.
All right. Well, there's... That is certainly one of the excuses used by people, but I have all the respect in the world for law enforcement. But oftentimes, what they say they've heard, and of course they're in the trenches. But there's lots of catalytic converters out there that have precious metal in them, and they don't really care if this one has 1.1 ounce and the other one has 1.2 ounces. So it's right. It's unfortunate, and obviously you've had two of them taken from you. I think the import cars are a little bit easier to get to. That's what I've been told, but our staff has said that they don't believe that's the truth. And we've had, I would say, between 10 and 20 of our customers affected by that. So I don't really have a rhyme and reason, but I can tell you that typically it's our opinion that based on the cars that we've done, they're doing apartment complexes so they can cut the cat off, and the owner might be, 50 yards away, 150 feet away from where the car is, and he's not going to hear the noise, and they feel safer that way. So I don't know. With a good sharp Sawzall, I would imagine that they're going to be under the car for probably 30 seconds to a minute by cutting on both ends. So, but anyway, thank you for that, Cusser. Thank you very, very much for the input. And he's right. They can unbolt them. Typically, the exhaust bolts and nuts on the exhaust system are rusted. And oftentimes, if we're going to work on something where we have to unbolt something from underneath the car, we're going to get the exhaust hot, and then we're going to spray it down with a WD-40-type product. We're going to let it sit, and then we're going to try to get everything loose. So in 1998 car, you're talking about a 25-year-old vehicle.
and more than likely those nuts and bolts haven't come off. And every time the engine has a heat cycle, it gets hot, cold, hot, cold. So do the nuts and the bolts on that catalytic converter. So I would imagine, and I'm thinking out loud here, it's possible that they came prepared knowing full well that those aren't going to come apart, but they brought wrenches to just break them apart. So we're going to try to unloosen this bolt knowing full well it's likely to break. So we push on it, and the whole bolt break. The bolt comes out in pieces, and now one of the four bolts of is gone. And that makes it pretty easy to steal it. So I'm thinking out loud, and if I was a bad guy, and people say that I've been bad in my life, my mother said that a lot, then that would be the explanation I would think for. I got another caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Harold.
Harold, good morning.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for working on the holiday day. I expected you to take the day off.
Well, you know what? I really do like doing the show. I did a Christmas show, and my wife used bad words when she found that out. But you know what? If you guys are going to be calling in and you patronize the show, then I can spend 2 hours with my friends, okay? That's my gift to myself.
Okay. Well, I got a question for you.
Okay.
About 6 months ago, my daughter bought a brand-new Hyundai Sonata, which she really loves. The other day, I was watching TV, and a bulletin came across the bottom of the screen indicating that the U.S. government was concerned about the number of engine failures and fires reported on certain Kia and Hyundai models. Do you know anything about this?
It is a... Yes, but this isn't locked down to just Kia. There's lots of other cars that have O-ring in the fuel system that fails, that causes a fuel leak, that causes the thing to catch fire. I think what I can best do for you is brief you on what you need to go over with your daughter. And that's this. Her insurance company is her parachute. If there's flames, she needs to get the kids, get the dog, get her purse, get out, and get far away. And don't shed any tears because her insurance company is going to buy her a new car. And so, so we need to prepare her for the worst so she knows exactly what to do. Shut the key off. Turn the flashers on. Grab the kids. Grab the purse. Forget the groceries. Forget this new sweater she just bought and get far enough away and assume that other people are going to call the police or she can call 911. We work these kinds of cases. And the insurance companies don't fight with this, and they're going to subrogate to the car manufacturer. So they'll put their customer back together pretty quick, but then they'll turn around and take all their lists of costs and expenses and stuff and hand it to the car manufacturer. And typically that's an easy transition. So this isn't anything that's going to leave her high and dry, and I would assume with a new car she's got full coverage and she's home free. It's just safety is the number one thing. Get out.
Yeah, and I think what I heard you say is this may not be particular to Hyundai or Kia, that other engines of other manufacturers can experience the same thing.
This gets started, and so I mean, we had Ford fires that turned out to be nothing. We've seen this a lot, and then we have people that really don't know that this motorhome was driving down the road, and then all of a sudden the whole back end of the motorhome exploded, and parts are flying all over and stuff like that. Well, yeah, the propane tank caught fire because somebody had a hose that was rubbed on the drive shaft. And so once we got a hole in the hose, then all we needed was a spark, and we were going to have a fire. So, and then all of a sudden, that Freightliner engine in that motorhome is a big piece of crap. No, this is a propane fire. So it gets caught up like that, but the car manufacturers, they don't like it when someone posts that in a public forum, and sometimes it's unwarranted, but time will tell. And I want to tell you something. The Kia and the Hyundai are really good cars. And I wouldn't, if my daughter or my son or my grandkids had those and they had this kind of an alert, you know, on the TV, I wouldn't be concerned about it. I would simply brief them about anything, any smoke coming out up under the hood. It's not drive home. It's not drive anywhere. Don't park at the gas station. Find a place, get out of the car, shut all the windows and doors and walk away. And just know that the fire department's coming, or call the fire department or call 911 and tell them your car's on fire. So just prepare them for that. But let me ask you this. If anybody out there has experienced a car fire, then call us and tell us what happened. And I'll bet you we don't have very many calls, if we have even one. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. But let's just do that. This kind of a scare doesn't really do anything for anybody other than scare dads and moms and stuff like that. So, again, just prepare her for the fire if it's going to happen and what she should do, and know that the insurance company will make her whole.
Thank you so much, Mark.
All right, good luck to you, Harold. Yeah, you know, I was going through some old paperwork the other day in my office up in Payson, and I found a traffic accident report where my middle daughter had been involved in a crash. And this was way back when black boxes were just coming out, and unfortunately for her, her dad had just bought the software to read the black box, and her version of the crash to the policeman didn't match the black box data on the car. And so we had a little talk about, you know, I want you to tell at the police, when you talk to the policeman at an accident, you have the right to remain silent. You might want to exercise that. But when you talk to your dad, you don't have the right to remain silent. And you need to talk to dad. And you need to tell dad the truth. Wonder. So he can be prepared for whatever the outcome may be. The black box in a car is one of the most amazing things. And we know so much about what's going on in the driver's compartment of a car, and we gather data far and wide. And so when you say that the throttle is stuck, it'll take us 6.5 seconds to figure out whether you're telling us the truth or not. So the numbers vary wildly. And the truck ends up in the mountains, rolled over on a mountain road, and the throttle stuck. But in reality, the throttle, through this rompin', stompin' drive that this truck went through, the throttle was on 100% to 55% to 61% to 32%. And the driver was bouncing around inside the truck, and the throttle was bouncing around inside the truck because his foot was on it. And then all of a sudden, the vehicle leaves the road, and the reason why we know it leaves the road is because the back tires went from like 52 miles an hour to 80. Okay, so they're not on the ground anymore. It's flying through the air, hits a tree, through the grace of God, nobody dies. The airbags work good, but the kid's talking about the stuck throttle, and his daddy takes the same thing. So at the appropriate time, the insurance company tells daddy that he's just out there romping and stomping his four-wheel drive truck in the wilderness, and he shouldn't have been. And he lost control of his truck, and there was a time where the truck went from 46 miles an hour to 80 miles an hour, and that's when the back tires were in the air, and his foot was still on the gas. Through the grace of God, nobody's hurt. Anyway, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We have five of them, 602-508-0960. Well, when it comes to diesels, there's lots of cars out there, but the diesel is really a 1% kind of car. 1% of the cars on the road are diesels. But when you have a shop called Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I can vouch that Nate and his crew are strictly diesel people. Now, he'll change the oil in your Ford car and stuff like that. But when it comes to diesel, whether it's Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Isuzu, he really can do a good job without guessing. That's what you want to avoid, is a shop that's going to guess with your money. Let's try this. Hope that didn't do it. Let's try this. Gets kind of expensive. There is a diagnostic procedure and equipment that we have to focus on the pinpoint problem. And Strictly Diesel is that kind of guy. He sells parts 24 hours a day at their website. And they're on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Phoenix. I know Nate. I know him well. And actually, he is a person I call when I have a diesel problem that I can't fix. I consult with Nate. All right, let's go to the phones, and let's go to John. John, thank you for holding through the break. How can we help you?
Mark, I've got a quick question. I'm supposed to be using Dexos 2 5W30 full synthetic for my little 2.8 Duramax.
Mm-hmm.
6 quarts. I got a 5-quart jug. They didn't have any 5W30 for the extra quart I need. Do you think I'd be okay using 0W20?
Sure. Sure.
One quart out of, and then five good ones?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about this from a big point of view. The oils you're talking about are full synthetics, and they're really good. And we use the heck out of a 020 right now. We're using 55-gallon drums on a daily basis. Now, we have tanks back in our utility room. I think we have 6 300-gallon tanks. So we're gunning six different products into different kinds of cars and trucks and stuff. Because we can pull a hose off the roof, we can dial in 5 quarts, and in about 20 seconds we can fill your car with oil. We don't have the trash of the lids, the bottles, and the cardboard boxes. That's what I like. I'm kind of an environmentalist, but don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
In your particular case, you can mix this and it's not going to make any difference at all. It's not going to throw the oil out of spec. It's just going to put a window in the protection. So it flows like a 5 weight when it's cold and flows like a 30 weight when it's hot. Well, it may flow like a 6 instead of a 5. You know what I mean? So don't worry about it. Yes, you can do that. And you don't have to buy the Dexos. Just buy the weight and the full synthetic and buy it for the cheapest you can. And I can tell you there are times that we go to Walmart and Costco to get oil. And
so you don't think, if I didn't use Dexos too, you don't think my warranty, if something happened to the engine, or think I would be okay?
Well, there's two answers. Number one, they're going to be hard pressed to find a lab that's going to be able to tell you this did or did not have Dexos in it. Number one. Number two, if the car manufacturer demands that you use a product that only their product, they have to provide it for you for free. That ain't happening.
Okay.
And there's four companies that make oil. There's no such thing as a Dexos manufacturing plant that takes crude and makes it into engine oil. Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron make all the oil consumed in the United States. Now, there is one big independent guy that basically does fleet oil, and he's using base stock and additives of that. So he is a big private label guy, but he's still buying his oil from Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, or Chevron. So you can talk to your lawyer and ask him, but I'm telling you, I've given that advice to hundreds, if not thousands, of people. I'm not against Chevrolet. I am a Chevrolet guy. The fact of the matter is that you don't have to use their oil any more than you have to use Motorcraft or you have to use the Dodge oil. You don't have to. You can use whatever you want.
Okay. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you very much. Willis, you're up next.
Yes, Mark, I'm trying to make a decision on buying a used car, 2013 Lexus or 2013 Lincoln MKZ. What would be your recommendation?
Oh, it'd be the Lexus. Yeah, it'd be the Lexus. It's important, though. Let me just comment. It's important. Are you buying these from a private party or from a lot?
What I'm looking for is low mileage, best price, be it on a lot or a private person.
Okay. You and I both know you're best served by some anal guy or woman who has all the maintenance records for this Lexus or this Lincoln, and stopped in the middle of their grocery shopping to go have the oil changed because the sticker was due. You know that's the car you want. You want a one-owner car that's been babied all of its life and has maintenance records that fill up a three-ring notebook. So, yes.
Very much so.
But I'm going to change your question. Which is the more dependable one, the Lexus? Which one do you see in the shop more, if they're both the same with respect to however many cars they've got on the road? We're going to see a little bit more of the Lincolns than we're going to see of the Lexus. Lexus is this fancy Toyota. It's a Cadillac, General Motors, Chevrolet kind of thing. So, no, in my personal opinion, I think if you could find a one-owner Lexus that had all the maintenance records, I'd buy that in a heartbeat, no matter what they were asking for, within reason.
Okay. And you know what? That is the kind of information that I wanted. I was leaning in that direction, but I wanted a second opinion. And in your opinion, in my opinion, is good.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a question. Is this for the wife?
No, it's for me.
Oh, okay, okay. Because if it's for the wife, I want you to take my name out of that equation. I don't need more wives being mad at me. I make fun of wives every once in a while, and I get in trouble. But if it's for you, between you and me and nobody else, okay, I really think you're going to find a Lexus that'll meet your needs and provide you good long service. Parts are readily available, and Toyota has always been a good car.
Okay, and so you're with me as far as low mileage, because I'm inclined to think if I'm above 100,000, the car has kind of gone through its reliability. What do you think?
No, not at all. Not at all.
No?
But let's go back to what you said. You're talking about a 13, okay? That's a 9-year-old car today. So Mark's truck's 140,000 miles, and I romp and stomp that Dodge diesel. I abuse that thing. I mean to tell you, I'm hauling loads that I shouldn't really haul. On dirt roads on a private ranch, I'm hauling loads that I shouldn't be hauling. But to be honest with you, every motor that we see that went to motor heaven, 99.9 of them are directly related to the person that had their hands on the steering wheel. They drove them low on oil, or they overheated the hell out of them. But if you don't overheat it and you don't run it low on oil and it's been maintained properly and it's not blowing blue smoke and it's not leaking oil like a sieve, that car's going to go until you damage it or it's just... But really and truly, I'm not worried about between 100 and 150, but the price has to be... What's the word I'm looking for? It has to be related to the car having 100 to 150,000 miles on it. That ain't no spring chicken. And
that's right.
And so I wouldn't have any problem with buying a used Lexus if I got it from a one owner kind of thing and they had the maintenance records, and I would be real happy with that. I would also suggest that you have somebody do a used car check over. Usually it's about $100, and they're going to give you a list of what it needs today and next week and next month and next year, and some of the issues that you might have to deal with. I got to put you on hold, Willis, because I'm up against a break. We'll be back talking about cars just right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here talking about cars from 10 to noon. I've been doing radio in the Phoenix Valley area since 1988. I had a stint in St. Louis on KMOX, a big station. I'll tell you a quick story about KMOX. KMOX continues to be a powerhouse central United States. And we used to talk, when we did radio shows, talk shows, I pulled a cab driver from Washington, D.C., and I also had a caller from Colorado, and then up to Montana and Idaho all the way across. I mean, they had a huge footprint. And I remember the cab driver one time called and he wanted to know how to reset his oil light or whatever. And I said, okay, well, I need you to pull over. And there's this silence. And I says, and when you pull over, then tell me you're going to... He goes, I got a fare. I said, so what? Just pull over. I'll fix your car for you right now. He starts laughing, and then I can hear the fare laughing behind him, the guy that's in the car with him. But anyway, he pulled off the side of the road, turn your key off, turn your key on, don't start the car, pump the throttle pedal three times, the light should go out, and then you're on your way. And he was laughing, and the guy was laughing in the background that he was talking to the car guy. But I've been doing this for a very long time, and I am an ASE Master Certified Technician, and so I've been around the block, and I've been tested many times for my skill level. But I'm only as good as the information you give me. So if I ask you a question and you say yes, I'm going to go this way. But if you say no, I'm going to go this way. And the other acceptable answer is I don't know. And that's how it goes. With respect to buying a used car, like we were just talking to Willis about a used car, it's a good idea to have somebody check it out. And it's called a used car inspection. And most of us are going to give you a list of stuff and costs associated with those repairs so that you can use that as a negotiation tool. And we're also going to be able to look at the car and say, this car's been road hard and put away wet. This car has not had a lot of maintenance, or this car has meticulous maintenance. We're able to see that and tell you that to some extent. So then, and those go anywhere from, I don't know, $100 to $200 for a used car inspection. And almost always in my world, the value is less than the benefit. So people will spend $100, $200 for, and it depends on what kind of car, truck, a diesel, whatever, for a used car checkover. And then they'll get that money back in the negotiation of, by the way, it needs $230 worth of work. I'd like to start there and let's drop that off the price. So that's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960. Action Auto Repairs up at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. Tom has a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that served Deer Valley and North Phoenix since 1983. Whatever your repair needs are, Tom and his staff are well-known for quality workmanship, good people, honest people, and it's not likely, at all likely, that you're going to take, someone's going to take advantage of you at Action Auto, because Tom's deeply immersed in the operation of that facility, just like most of the rest of us are. So we know if we've got a bad apple, and we know if A matches B. So if you come in and your car is backfiring, and all of a sudden he wants to replace the air conditioning system, we already know that one and one doesn't equal two, and there's a disconnect here, and perhaps it's a communication problem, or it's perhaps he saw that the air conditioning was a much better way for him to spend time with your car than looking over something that, you know, was intermittent. So Action Auto Repair, good guys. Did you say something, Gil?
Oh, yeah, Gil, I'm ready. And a caller.
Okay, go ahead.
Say hello to Scott.
Scott, good morning, buddy. How can I help you?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing well. How are you?
You know, I'm good. I'm good. The new year started off good. My wife said she loved me this morning, and what else could I ask for?
That's a good thing. Mark, a real quick question. I'm working on a older GMC pickup. The rear pinion on the rear differential, the pinion seal is leaking. And what my question was is there an additive I can add to the gear oil to kind of swell that seal up a little bit?
Not really, but if you want to try an old-fashioned thing, brake fluid causes rubber to swell. However, it's assuming that the seal itself isn't cracked. Of course, nothing's going to fix the crack. But if you want to try to put in
1 minute,
a third of a bottle of brake fluid in the differential, a third of a 12, this real small bottle. I don't know, I think 10 ounces maybe?
Right, I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah, two ounces of brake fluid in your differential. That would treat it. Otherwise, you're going to have to pull the cover off the back, and you're going to have to disconnect the drive shaft, and you're going to have to take the yoke off of it that's torqued with a big bolt and a big nut. And you're going to have to slide the pinion out, then change the seal, and then put everything back together. And there's also a collar up there, and if the collar is worn out, then the pinion is wobbling. And if you don't replace the collar or the bushing, then it's going to wobble and take the new one out too. So
okay.
How bad
okay.
is the leak?
Well, I was backing it up, and I noticed a spot on the concrete, maybe 2-3 inch diameter of gear oil on the concrete.
How long had it been sitting there?
No, not so much sitting there. I backed it up from the backyard into the driveway, and I noticed the spot.
Okay, but, I mean, how long had it been sitting over that old spot?
Oh, gosh. Maybe 3 or 4 months.
Okay. All right. The first thing I'd want to know is get it on level ground and let's pull the drain plug in. And if you pull the drain plug and oil starts coming out of the drain plug, then it's over full.
That's a good point. I didn't think of that.
Yeah. Let's do that first before we start messing with everything else. Let's see where the oil level's at. When you put your little finger in the hole, and if you can 90 degree the first joint on your little finger, you should be able to touch the oil with the end of your little finger. It should be about a half, between a quarter and a half an inch below the hole. And if you draw that horizontal line, that fluid line should not go up higher than the bottom part of the pinion seal as you look from the side of the differential.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. Because the pinion seal is going to be higher than the oil level itself.
Yes, and it's going to be fed with splashing of the ring and pinion.
Okay, I got you. Okay, that makes sense. I'll do that.
All right.
Hey, thank you so much for your time, and you have a great year.
No problem. And same to you. Thank you very much. Yeah, we're talking about the differential, and that's he has a solid differential, so it's not an independent differential. It has two axles back there. It has two axles, but they're all within the housing. So he said older model GMC truck, which I know what he's talking about. And we have an area that we need to bathe with oil, but we need that area to be slightly above the fluid level. And so we're going to be splashing around in there because these big gears are hitting one another, and there's just like a huge rainstorm of oil going on. And so that's why we have to make sure that the fluid level is not full. And oftentimes people do overfill it. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Okay, so you live up at I-17 in Bell. You're looking for a good shop, and there's lots of car repair shops around there. But in Mark Salem's position and in my opinion, Kurtz Auto Repair is the place you ought to go. I-17 and Bell, northeast corner, ASC certified technicians. Kurtz there on a daily basis. Eric's there on a daily basis. They do both gas, diesel, domestic, imports. And they know when they're not the best shop like all the rest of us do. So he may very well say, we are not the best shop for this diagnosis, but so-and-so does a great job on your Lexus. Every time you honk the horn, the passenger side airbag pops. That's a stupid example, but you get the point. But Kurtz Auto's been around a very, very long time. They opened their doors in 1987. I know Kurt. I know Eric. I know that they do a good job, and I'm really proud because I can send people to them, and then I'm going to get a call back from the customer or the caller that says they did a great job, and they were everything you said they were. So Kurtz Automotive. Now, on the other side of town, 38th Avenue and Indian School, you got Larry Harker's Auto. You got Bob and Ellen. Ellen's at the front counter. Bob's in the shop. You're going to end up with Ellen at the front side, but don't think for a minute she doesn't know a lot about cars. So you'll have to just close your eyes and pretend you're speaking to a grizzly old technician with grease in his fingers from the 1970s, because she has that kind of experience. But Bob's pulled a rabbit out of his head. I don't know how many times. I can't tell you how many times I've sent somebody to Parker's and said, try them and see what happens. And they call back and they say, it was a wonderful example, wonderful experience. He fixed the car and he did it for less than the other guy, blah, blah, blah. So we're not always going to be a price competitive place, but fixing it, I think that's your priority. So Larry Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School, a great place to go. John, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, how are you doing today? I want to wish you a happy new year, and thanks for taking my call. I have a 2006 Chevy Monte Carlo that I'm getting a hum out of the front end at about 40 miles an hour, and it stays pretty constant. It doesn't get any louder when I get on the freeway to bring it up to 65. So I just wanted to see what your thoughts were on it, and what do you think should be done, or what diagnostic should be done on it?
Well, first of all, I need you to go out to a Cloverleaf on Sunday morning. And I need you to make some 40, 50, 60-mile-an-hour clover leaves within reason now. And I need you to left turn into a clover leaf, and does the noise change? Right turn into the clover leaf, does the noise change? I need a little bit of more work. And then I need you to get it in a position where you know the hum is going to be there, and then I need you to throw it into neutral. Is the hum still there? Put it back down into drive. Is the hum still there? Throw it into neutral. And this is where you have to do it on Sunday mornings. Turn the key to the off position and just drive down the road with no engine. Now, you throw it in neutral. You hit the key. You start it. And you're doing 40, 50, 60 miles an hour. It's no harm. You're going to slide it down into drive and drive on. You need more diagnostics, because is this an engine-related hum? Is it a wheel bearing? And if so, you can actually diagnose which wheel bearing it is by going through a clover leaf. So when you turn right and you got the hum, it's the outer left or the inner on the right. But we also have to eliminate the air conditioning application. We have to eliminate power steering hums. You have lots going on there. But to be perfectly honest with you, just about every shop I've ever talked about is capable of taking you and having you tell them what to do, and the diagnostic on that would be on a 1 to 10 scale would be about a 3, a 4.
I kind of thought that it could have been the wheel bearings, because that's the kind of the sound I'm getting out of it, but now I've got to go a little bit further and really see from what you're telling me.
Well, if you get on the highway in the mornings when nobody's there and you're on a five-lane highway and you're going down the road and straight ahead and it's humming, it's probably not going to be a wheel bearing until you start swerving gently left and gently right. If you swerve left, okay. and then you straighten it up and it goes away. Then you go right and there's no noise. Then you go back left, yeah. It's really that easy. But you just need more work on the diagnostic side. That's all.
Gotcha. Well, I'm gonna have to do it today because it is one of those days where it is kind of quiet out. So
yeah,
I'll take it out and I'll see what it turns out to be. And I also want to thank you very much for the time that you give us. And I really appreciate everything that you do. I call you quite often. Last time I called, I had a Buick Riviera with a situation with the fuel pump. And you gave me the right answers, and I made sure my wife was out there with the fire extinguishers, and yeah, she's standing there, looked like a fireman, you know. The only thing I didn't give her was the fireman's hat, and you know, with the fuel extraction of about 19 gallons of fuel, I filled up a 5-gallon jug 3 times, so you know, it did the trick, and I finished up the job, and the car started right up, and everybody was happy all the way around. You know, I got a high five from all my neighbors, you know.
Well, you didn't burn the neighborhood down. Plus, they all had gasoline for their lawnmowers for the next 6 months.
And that's the truth.
Yeah.
I can't get it out to a lot of people also.
Yeah. Well, thank you for noticing. And you know, I get great pleasure out of helping. I've been blessed in ways that I don't know why. And if and when, my wife says, if and when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask him, you know, why me? Why did you bless me like you did? But I like what I'm doing, and giving advice on car repair stuff has worked well for us with respect to our business, as well as it kind of, in a subtle way, we can describe the differences, verbal differences, between the shop that really has their interest in front of yours and a shop who has your interest in front of theirs. And that's really what it's all about.
That's the correct rationale to have, I'll tell you that. And, you know, I'll continue calling you because the information that you give me is priceless.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that. Tony, you're up. How can I help you?
Hey, how are you doing? And Happy New Year.
And to you too. And I'm fine. My wife still loves me. We played cards last night with people, and I didn't get kicked out early, and I didn't use any bad words, and Renee's happy.
Well, that's great. Well, my problem is I have a 1976 Corvette Stingray with the L42. I think it was the L48 350. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, I will start it up. I don't drive it a whole lot, you know, but I keep it on the battery tender. And then, you know, my light's green, everything's good. I start it up. I'll take it for a little spin. And then I come back and turn it off, and then it's dead.
Okay, now, I need to ask you a couple questions here. When you say it's dead, when you hit the key to go to start, what noise are you hearing?
Nothing.
Okay.
Not, it just, you know.
All right.
And now I have had it started, and then I've, you know, unhooked the battery, and it still ran, so I know that, I don't know if that's an old tale about maybe, you know, the alternator not, you know, working.
No, stop. Let's not take tangents like that. First of all, you never take the battery cables off when the alternator's there, and you probably wiped out one of the three diodes when you did that. And number two, when you hit the key and nothing happens, that doesn't mean a battery. The key sends a signal through the neutral safety switch. The neutral safety switch then is wired to the starter solenoid, and then it activates the solenoid that activates the starter. So the question is it an automatic or standard?
It's an automatic.
Okay, so I would be, you need to go to marksalem.com. I think it's FAQ 28. It's no start, no crank, no click. And I'll walk you through everything. You'll use the headlights as a voltmeter, for instance. You get into the car, and before you start it, you turn the headlights on, and they're shining on the wall in front of the garage, and they're white and bright. You hit the key, the thing starts up, and when it starts up, you saw a slight dimming of the white and bright headlights during the cranking mode. So then you go drive it. Then you come back home and you park it and you wait until you know that it's just not going to do anything. And then you hit the key. You turn the headlights on and you hit the key.
The headlights are shining on the wall in front of you. They're white and bright, and when you hit the key, nothing happens. Well, that means that the key is sending this, hopefully the key sending the signal to the neutral safety switch, and hopefully the neutral safety switch is sending it to the starter solenoid. So if that's the case, then hold it to the start position, grab a hold of the shifter, and rattle it around in park, and whoosh, all of a sudden it starts. Oh, well, let's just adjust the neutral safety switch. Or you hit the key, nothing happens, then you get underneath the car and you hit the starter with a hammer while she's holding the key to the start position, and you hit the starter with the hammer, boom, it starts right up. That's the diagnostic process. This is a piece of cake. This is a piece of cake. But go to FAQ, I think it's FAQ 28, no start, no crank. And it talks about somebody's watching the headlights. They need to be white and bright to start with, and then we'll track down whether it's the power is being stopped at the neutral safety switch, or the power is being stopped before it gets to the starter solenoid, or the starter solenoid is not triggering the starter motor. This is really a piece of cake. And it's that way on all new cars as well, so it's not that your Corvette, your 76 Corvette's not that much different than, you know, a 2022 Corvette. They all have the same kind of infrastructure.
Well, thank you so much. I'll go to that and I'll try that stuff. I listen to you every Saturday morning, and you've helped a lot of people, you know. And I was just, now there's one other thing. I have an alarm on there that some guy put in that I don't know. Could that be drawing from the battery and doing it also?
No, it's not going to be. You're using terminology that's not correct. It's not going to be drawn from the battery, because that alarm system takes 1 amp and the starter takes 150 to 200 amps. Mm-hmm. So there's no way that, but it can interrupt the start. It can interrupt the start. We put a solenoid in there where we basically separate the wire that's going to the starter solenoid. So in an alarm situation, we're not going to let you start the car. So yes, but if that's the case, then you're going to have to go to a stereo shop that knows those alarm systems real well, and most of us old guys know them as well, and determine. But do you have a fob that you fire up the alarm system with?
Yeah.
Okay. Does it honk the horn or flash the lights when you arm and disarm?
Yes.
Okay. That's important. So we're going to forget, at this point, we're going to forget you have an alarm system. We're still going to do FAQ 28. 10-4?
Yep. So okay. What was it? F what now?
I think it's FAQ 28. It's called no start, no crank, no noise.
Okay, I'll go on that side.
Okay, because when you hit the key and you hear a click, that's one thing. If you hear a grunt, that's something. If you don't hear anything, that's something. But like I said, the path of electricity goes from the battery to the ignition switch, from the ignition switch through the neutral safety switch, from the neutral safety switch to the solenoid, and the solenoid to the start. I can say on a 1 to 10 scale, the difficulty on this for us gray-haired guys is maybe a 3. So it's not that tough. But I worked really hard at identifying all the things you need to do. And this, if you get to the point where you're going to hit the starter when somebody holds the key in, make sure she loves you. Because she's going to be sitting in the car, and she's going to have her foot on the brake, and she's going to have the transmission shift lever pushed forward. And you're going to say, okay, honey, when I say hit the key, you hold it to the start position. And you say, okay, ready, set, honey, hit the key. And hold it there, honey, and you take the hammer, and the first hit, boom, the start thing starts up. You better hope she doesn't back over your head.
And, I'll make sure.
Okay. All right. And,
well,
and,
thank you so much, because it's been terrible, you know, because I would drive it for a while. I've been stranded 3 or 4 times, and then all of a sudden, maybe 45 minutes later, after jiggling the ignition and jiggling stuff, it started. But, you know, it's a beautiful car, but it's, you know, not if it's sitting in the garage.
All right. This, you know? Again, this is a piece of cake. I mean, it's really not that big of a deal. This is, if we had a boatload of these every day, we'd all be gone. We'd be going home at lunch. So, I mean, the gray-haired guys. The question, and here's what you're missing. When I hit the key, nothing happens. Does the radio dim? Do the headlights dim? Are we using any electricity? I turn on the headlights, I hit the key, they don't change intensities. That means the power's not leaving the key. So we have to find out why. That this is really very simple. But anyway, that FAQ will walk you through it. I've spent a lot of time rewriting that thing, and it's as good as it's ever been. So I'm pretty sure that's the one. Anyway, the rest of you, 602-508-0960, 602-508. No, you can't call in because the show is over.